This week's episode of The Dive is brought to you by Pelican Brewing. For nearly 30 years, Pelican Brewing has crafted the most balanced tasting brews. Now, they're bringing the same satisfying taste to hop-infused sparkling water with zero alcohol and zero calories. Sparkle Hops is a hop and fruit-infused new way to elevate your everyday. Expertly brewed from hops in two flavors, Citra hop-infused sparkling water with lemon and Strata hop-infused sparkling water with acai. Start with a sip and breeze away with the balance of quality hops, ripe fruit, and punchy fizz. Refreshment, it's a Pelican thing. Welcome to the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week, where every Saturday we discuss the biggest news stories of the week with Portland's noisiest newsmakers, savviest culturistas, and some of the best journalists in the game. I'm your host, Brianna Wheeler, and I want to hear from you. So send your questions and comments to me, bwheeler@wweek.com. All right, y'all, enjoy the show. This last summer, my partner's car was stolen from right in front of our house. The next day, it was found, abandoned, and it was towed to an impound lot. I think it's safe to say, creepy jerk at the tow lot explained that our driving column had been smashed open so that any key could now start the car. And though there were signs of an attempt to remove it, including a hastily discarded scattering of tools in the back seat, our catalytic converter was still intact. So was the skull-shaped meth pipe that the thieves left in the center console. The angry tow driver posited that the thieves were likely in the process of removing the converter when PPD or some other such entity rolled up on them. Considering the deserted meth skull they left behind, it seems like they evacuated our Subaru Forester in a right hurry. We ended up selling the car, but the question remained, who the fuck is buying all of these stolen catalytic converters, and how do they keep getting away with it? It's Saturday, December 3rd, and this is episode 100 of The Dive. Today I'm talking to Lucas Manfield, whose cover story, From Portland to Jersey, not only answers that question, but also paints a picture of a nationwide crisis where bad actors can connect on the shady side of Facebook Marketplace and then allegedly collect millions in illicit sales. Well, assuming they cover their tracks well enough. Lucas and I will unpack the several months that he spent with this story in just one sec. But first, here's what I learned from this week's edition of Willamette Week. The city has finally settled a 2-year-old lawsuit filed by activists who claimed PPD used indiscriminate force during 2020's George Floyd protests. Each of the 5 people named in the lawsuit will receive $50,000, and PPD will discontinue the use of rubber ball shooting flash bang grenades. Until the next people's uprising, I presume, when they will surely have filled that vacuum with some other projectile torture device surplus from the military. I don't know, I'm just spitballing. Sophie Peel reports that Portland's enhanced service districts, which are 3 business districts in which business owners agree to pay a fee for additional security and cleanup services, had the Holy Ghost audited out of them in 2020. Transparency issues and lackadaisical oversight were major complaints. Now, all 3 districts have united to air their grievances to the city, and you can read their emails yourself on page 9. 2 of Oregon's most trusted and celebrated cannabis brands, East Fork Cultivars and Peak Extracts, have merged, and I did a quick little Q&A with the founders of both brands for this week's Potlander column. Their merger creates a roadmap for small cannabis brands who want to expand their lines without sacrificing the quality of their products or their reputations. Expect good things coming from both lines very soon. Now, let's chat with Lucas Manfield about his cover story, From Portland to Jersey, inside the crime ring that shipped stolen catalytic converters across the country.
Yeah, I mean, basically, like, there was this massive kind of takedown of the catalytic converter criminal ring back in August, centered right in Beaverton. Well, the Beaverton police took it down, but it was actually centered in Lake Oswego. And kind of like one of the big unanswered questions at the time was, where are the catalytic converters actually going? Mm-hmm. Like, who are they selling these things to? And the police were kind of coy about it back then. But what happened earlier this month was that these like simultaneous investigations across the country all resulted in indictments, and they were focused on this New Jersey company that was buying these catalytic converters from all over the country. And so what we kind of did is we connected the dots between one of the guys that was selling to these guys in New Jersey. He was operating out of New York, was buying from the guy in Lake Oswego. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of the connection between these investigations.
So there's two main players. It's Brendan Doyle and Tanner Hellbush. I mean, what a name. Come on.
I know.
Can we get, what are the cliff notes on these two?
Yeah, sure. So starting with Hellbush, Tanner was basically a low-level thief. Like, he was, he had quite a criminal rap sheet, and, like, he had been caught, you know, attempting to steal things, you know, whether it was, you know, cars or, you know, catalytic converters. He had been stealing stuff. At some point, it seems like he realized that he could pay other people to steal for him and started kind of accumulating catalytic converters. Again, this is all alleged from the criminal indictments. You know, they got innocent but proved guilty. But he was allegedly like pulling in catalytic converters from all over Portland and buying them from other low-level thieves. And then he was essentially selling these, a lot of catalytic converters, to Brendan Doyle. And so Brendan Doyle was essentially an entrepreneur. He's, you know, my age. He went to Tualatin High School. He kind of started a series of failed companies, it looks like, and at some point started this business where he was buying in bulk catalytic converters and then reselling them to the East Coast. So he doesn't really have a criminal rap sheet. This is, you know, this seems like kind of the first time the police have really picked him up on a major crime.
You mentioned that Brendan Doyle was, you know, quote, an unassuming Uber driver. So I'm wondering, how does this entry level entrepreneur orchestrate this big scheme? Also, did he think that he was running a legit operation?
Yeah, these are two great questions. So the first question, like, how did he end up doing this? I mean, kind of the way it was described to me, because I wasn't able to interview him. I called him, he hung up on him. The police did interview him, obviously. And so, you know, kind of secondhand, what I know is, yes, to answer your second question, it seems like it's unclear if he believed he was operating a legal business, mm-hmm. but he certainly thought it was defensible. So, like, his defense was that he was operating it as legally as possible. So whether he knew it was criminal or not, he thought he had a certain amount of defense because he wasn't actually out there stealing them. Mm. Obviously, the police are charging him with racketeering, which is kind of a way to bring down criminal enterprises when the people at the top aren't necessarily handling the stolen goods. Mm-hmm. So to go back to how he got into it, I mean, the best that I can piece together is that, you know, he owned a Subaru. He was really into, you know, cars. He was a car guy. Realized that there was this burgeoning black market for one of the car parts that he was replacing. And he got in touch with this guy in New York. And the New York guy was essentially posting on Facebook saying, I will buy these things in bulk. I will pay for shipping. And that, once he kind of had that connection to the East Coast, that became very valuable because Oregon passed this law that basically made it very difficult to sell catalytic converters locally and profit off them mm-hmm. to like legitimate metal recyclers. And so there was this demand locally for kind of an illegitimate buyer. And so Doyle was kind of in the middle and was doing that facilitation.
One thing about this that really blew my mind was how much of the organization took place on Facebook Marketplace.
Yeah. It's wild. I mean, go on Facebook Marketplace and search for catalytic converters. I mean, they're still on there, right? I mean, it's not nearly as crazy as it used to be because people are, you know, the people on there are starting to realize it's being cracked down on. But I mean, recycling catalytic converters is a legitimate business. It's a huge business, right? Because it is, you know, if you have an old car, it's maybe one of the most, if not the most valuable thing on that old car, right? Because it's retained its value. It has a lot of heavy metals in it. And so, you know, there is a valid marketplace online for people buying and selling these things. The problem is that they're untraceable and there's no VIN number on them. And so it's next to impossible for police to discriminate between a stolen catalytic converter and a legitimate catalytic converter that's being sold by someone that actually owns it, right? So that's kind of why, you know, I mean, that's why it's like difficult to go on Facebook Marketplace and saying, oh, this is a stolen catalytic converter for sale and this is a legit one for sale. So yeah, a lot of business being done online.
What's the value of a catalytic converter?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that is also why this is a very interesting crime, because the short answer is anywhere between zero and thousands of dollars. It's very unclear. And the reason it's unclear is that you can go online and buy a third-party catalytic converter for very cheap. It won't have many heavy metals in it, and it frankly won't be doing much to eliminate the pollution from the back of your car, but you can buy one, right? If you're buying like a stock Ford F-350, that thing has, it legally has to have a lot of metals in it, because otherwise EPA is going to be like, this thing's a polluter.
Yeah.
And so, you know, those big trucks, you know, at least like last year, if you stole a catalytic converter off one of those trucks, it could have thousands, be worth thousands of dollars. The what's interesting thing is about this Jersey company was essentially operating an app, and the app, one of the benefits of the app is that it gives you real time quotes. So you could like take the catalytic converters do have a code on them. It's not like a unique code, but like the code, they could put that code into the app and it would say, oh, this brand of catalytic converter is worth this much money at this market prices. And so that was one of the reasons this Jersey company exploded, because that was a very handy tool for people that were trying to rip these things off, right?
How was it all uncovered? What was it? What was the straw that like broke the camel's back?
Yeah, well, I mean, I should say, it was just the police really, this was a massive, massive, massive investigation. I mean, to put it in perspective, you know, there were, it was in Oregon, it was centered around the Beaverton Police Department really led it. And then they were joined by the Tigard Police Department, multiple counties, and then the state sent investigators to basically help out with setting up the wiretaps. And this took months and months and months. It took dozens of law enforcement, you know, doing teams around the clock, trying to follow these guys, figure out where they were moving the money. Just like, it was a massive operation, and that's just Oregon. You look federally, like when the DOJ basically announced this multi-state takedown in November, they listed like over 70, I think it was like 75, 80 different jurisdictions, like different law enforcement organizations that helped them. None of those even counted the Oregon ones, because they weren't even counting Oregon when they did that. So like, this is just a massive investigation across the country. You know, so there was basically across the country, everyone had the same question, you know, we had at Willamette Week, which is like, where are these catalytic converters going? And law enforcement was like, we can figure this out. And so they were treating it essentially like a reverse drug conspiracy, being like, we're going to start, like they wanted to figure out where all the catalytic converters were flowing up. So they just started getting names from people that were stealing them, being like, where are you selling that? And they were working their way up the hierarchies of the organizations. And I think this was basically happening in parallel across the country. I know California was definitely one of the first. They were focusing on a guy in Sacramento. You know, Oregon was picking up Tanner. So he was kind of like the locus of what they were looking at. And then as they started going up, a lot of these organizations ended up looking at the same guys, these guys in New Jersey. And so they started talking, all the jurisdictions around the country, like Oregon was in talks basically with like, I think it was like seven other jurisdictions talking about what they were finding. And they're realizing that all of these are going to the same place. And so that's kind of resulted in this big takedown. And I should also say that like, even though they took down this one kind of like what seems to be one massive organization, there are many other, like no one thinks that these are all the catalytic converter buyers, illegal buyers in the United States. This is just one organization. There are certainly countless more.
Yeah. Yeah. One of my questions is certainly, have catalytic converter thefts gone down since the arrests of Brendan Doyle and Tanner Hellbush?
Yeah, and that was another really interesting finding from this, because like, another big question. And you know, one thing, you know, we've been, I've been writing a lot about catalytic converters just because it's just a really annoying crime. And like, you know, we did this story with Portland Public Schools was losing a ton of catalytic converters on their buses.
Yeah.
It's just like, come on.
Yeah.
And so,
the special needs buses at that.
I know, right? Like, it's, come on. And so the, one of the interesting things they told me is they were like, yeah, it's dropped a lot. As soon as they busted those guys in Beaverton, we haven't seen any more thefts. And so that kind of was like, got me thinking, you know, was that a coincidence or was that real? And so, yeah, I mean, we asked the Portland police, and the problem is that they don't really track catalytic. Like, the Portland police released, like, a lot of data kind of on those crimes that are happening on a daily basis around the city, but they don't really separate out catalytic converter theft.
Mm.
So the last time that they'd kind of done that was in August. So August was, like, really the most recent month we had with good data. And if you look at August, the numbers dropped significantly. They dropped 28%.
Wow.
And so that's kind of the evidence that I kind of, like, it was compelling evidence in my mind that, like, this had done something.
Yeah.
With that said, maybe we get data from, like, September and it goes back up. And maybe that's because someone else came in and, you know, took over the Brennan Doyle-sized hole of the illegal illicit catalytic converter theft ring. I don't know.
It's certainly, but, that's a vacuum. That's going to get filled.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I don't know. But, I mean, it, and, yeah, I mean, generally, anecdotally, among people I'm talking to, there's a sense of this, you know, really made a dent in it.
Mm-hmm. What was the wildest thing that you learned while you were reporting this?
I think the wildest thing was just the number of people that took a cut. This story, there was a total of 14 people that were indicted in Beaverton, and like we only covered, I think, really only a couple of them in this story. And I think I was like doing the math early on because I was trying to figure out like how many people took a cut of each catalytic converter that was going through. And like there was really like seven different layers. Like seven people made money off that one catalytic converter that was getting stolen from a car, which is just wild, right? Like I mean, it's just it shows, I think, a couple of things. Like one, that like the thieves that are stealing them off the street, they're not even the ones that are making all the money off this, right? Like the money is coming like higher up the chain to these guys that are buying, you know, like Lambos, like in New Jersey, right? Like they're the ones that are making the real money off the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I don't know. I think that was the thing that like really got me, because I mean, people just had this idea that it was just like, I had the idea that, you know, it was just, you know, guys on the streets like selling them, and then I don't know what they did with them. But like now, once I saw where the money went, I'm like, oh man, like, yeah, the real problem is these guys out there that
yeah.
are getting off it.
What was cut out or left out of the story?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, again, lots of people, right? I mean, everyone had there was a lot of crazy stories of like how people got involved in these rings and like, you know, what they were doing. I think, yeah, I don't know. I mean, we talked about like Casey Smith a little bit in the story, but like he actually talked to me briefly. That was interesting. And we had kind of like a short conversation, and like Casey Smith was very adamant that what the implication of what he was telling was that, you know, he was operating a legal business and that what was, you know, the illegal activity was being done by people on the streets or actually stealing them. And so he, I don't know about Brennan Doyle, but like, he definitely thought that it was just a legal small business.
Mm-hmm. And so. Casey was Brendan's partner?
Yeah, they were what appear to be high school friends. So I think they both went to Tualatin High School. Yeah, like Casey's kind of like surfing in San Diego. I mean, he has an address in Sun River as well, mm-hmm. but like, I mean, Casey is not your typical idea of like what a hardened criminal looks like.
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah. The way that you describe them, like the Lake O beach or the lake house, the Beaverton cul-de-sac, like this is some white collar nonsense. My goodness. Yeah. Just getting away with it too, like in these really like bougie neighborhoods. Like I get side-eyed when I'm walking through those neighborhoods, but you can run a catalytic converter ring of theft and nobody bats an eyelash.
No, that's really the remarkable thing too. You know, I mean, I like talk to neighbors and stuff, and like people were obviously surprised when SWAT teams came in, and they like thought the guys, I mean, they honestly, I think it seemed like people just thought they were just kind of like, you know, party kids.
Yeah.
Right. I don't think anyone thought they were running massive criminal organizations.
Thanks to this week's guest, Lucas Manfield, and thank you for joining me. I hope you'll join me again next week. Until then,
bye.